Hey everybody, real quick, the World SF Tour fundraiser we're doing is still going on. We need your help because this is the last month as of the time this should go up, which is the 9th. That means we have 19 days to go until the deadline, which means we got to raise a lot in that time. Basically, if you like our show, we want to be at Worldcon to do recordings, to do live walk-by sessions, which anyone who's attending can come by. You just look at our Twitter account when we say it, that kind of thing, and you just show up at the location and contribute. All kinds of stuff that we want to do while we're there, programming, etc., etc. So we're also going to try to do a live episode. So in case you are happen to be a fan and you are going to Worldcon or an international person or whatever. But in any case, right now we really need a lot of support, which is mostly just financial support and people babbling about it. So if you can, take a minute out of your day, just, you know, give us like $10 or something. All the details are on skiffingfanny.com. If you go into the little right-hand sidebar, you'll just see it. It'll just say the little GoFundMe and everything. There are perks, so some of those have already been released. In case you didn't know, the perk for this month will be the Torture Cinema episode recorded in April, which was selected by Mike Martinez, who was a donor, and he picked Highlander 2, which means we're going to be watching that piece of crap. So it should be fun. Mike is also going to join us for that episode, which is going to be pretty cool. So in other news, I don't really have any other news. Just there'll be ICFA episodes that are coming and that kind of stuff. So that's it. So I'm going to shut up and I'm going to let you get to the episode. Enjoy.
Coming soon to a theater near you.
Life in the city of Manhattan is peaceful, a place where any man can wander down the street and bark orders at unsuspecting women.
Move it, lady. I ain't got no time for your shenanigans.
Why, I never!
But nothing is as it seems.
The prophecy is, like, totally true, Catwoman.
Meow. Say it ain't so, kitten. If Vampyra ceases to be a mannequin, she will wreak destruction upon the entire world.
And the rivers will run with the blood of man. Steaming, stinking, slippery blood. Like the vampire sex, only Suki Stackhouse would understand.
For from the depths would come a great terror. A terror for all mankind.
I have arisen.
Whoa, that's totally radical. A vampire babe.
Don't call me babe.
And before Vampyra, all will tremble. Sorta. Mostly. Only some people.
It's time for our revenge, ladies. Sweet, horrible revenge. With kittens.
Meow. Kittens. Delicious, beautiful kittens.
So, like, you're here to what? Like, create a Russian while away or something? Is that what's happening here?
I'm here to liberate this world in blood, to become its empress for all time, to give every woman an Armani suit and a fire red Ferrari. And kittens. Kittens for all.
Silly lady. They don't make Armani suits for women.
I will wear what I like, peasant.
That was totally awesome. Did you see that, Keanu? Keanu?
Starring 80s rock band Starship. Kristen Stewart.
So, do you glitter in sunlight?
Betty White is Vampyra.
Vampires do not glitter. They burn. Like this world. Like marshmallows. Delicious kitten-shaped marshmallows.
Keanu Reeves is Bill. Or Ted. Which is it? You know, from that 80s movie.
I'm only in this movie for 5 minutes, but you'll probably hate me anyway.
Catwoman.
A woman in charge of the world. Perfect.
Estelle Getty is Mrs. Timken.
In my day, we didn't have vampiric war maidens and such shenanigans. We had to make do with diaphragms.
Disney Animated Pictures and Zack Snyder present a Julie Taymor production directed by Guillermo del Toro and Sting. The new hit romantic comedy of the year, Mannequin 3, Bloodbath in Manhattan. In the city of warrior women, nobody can hear you mansplain.
Kittens.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
But the crowd forgot one thing, it. Monsters, John. Monsters from the It.
There you go again, always blaming me for everything.
Go switch off!
It's a trap!
This looks extraordinarily bad.
Commencing countdown. T minus 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanny Show, episode 197.
Because suddenly, a mannequin that turns into a real person is a fantasy movie.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Jen.
I'm Julia.
And obviously today we are doing some torture cinema, in which we are going to review the movie Mannequin. Because why not? I say why not, but of course people selected this. By people, I mean the folks who listened to the show, they picked Mannequin. Which is a special kind of movie.
It's very special. I think what makes it more special is that my husband loves this movie.
Oh God, may he die.
So when I told him last night that I was having trouble like downloading it and watching it, he was like, why do you need to watch it again? You've seen it like 10 times. And I kind of paused for a moment. I was like, no, honey, you've seen it at least 10 times. I've only seen it once, probably in 1987 when it came out. And I never watched it again because it's horrible.
It really is. So
meanwhile,
bad.
At the age of 6, he apparently fell in love with Kim Cattrall and the idea of falling in love with Mannequin. And it's still a running joke with him that he's got a thing for mannequins. So,
in fairness, Kim Cattrall is gorgeous in this.
Yes.
But so was she in Big Trouble in Little China, and that's a much better movie.
She has about as much character as a mannequin.
Yeah, she's really not. But in any case, that's getting ahead of ourselves. So we should probably talk about the really most important detail we could possibly talk about, which is what we're all drinking. So Julia, we'll start with you. What are you drinking?
Well, in honor of Mannequin, I am drinking Laphroaig whiskey in a Diet Coke, which I know that people who are whiskey purists are going to be like, what the hell? But I have to tell you, if you have not tried this, it is amazing. It's basically turned my Diet Coke into something that's like smoky Diet Coke. It's so good. And I know, like, you can drink your whiskey straight up if you want to, but if you put it into a Diet Coke and it's Laphroaig, it will make you magical smoky Diet Coke, which reminds me of wood, which is what the mannequin is made of and should stay forever.
Excellent. I was wondering how you were going to wrap around to be in honor of Mannequin.
I was like, well, what's a mannequin indeed drink? And I was like, well, either I need like the most 80s-tastic cocktail with like strange sunglasses ever, or I need something made of wood.
Fabulous.
Interesting. All right. What about you, Jen?
I went with cheap, old, sitting on my counter for a week wine. Specifically... a Gewurztraminer, which I can't even pronounce because...
Gewurztraminer.
Gewurztraminer. No, it's not. It's like more than that. There's an extra syllable in there that I can't even pronounce.
It's Gewurztraminer.
But there's no wiener.
It's Gewurztraminer.
Oh, Gewurztraminer.
Yeah,
whatever. I didn't take it to German.
Just drink more, and then it won't matter that you can't pronounce
it. Right, exactly. So that's what I'm drinking, and it's
delicious.
And the part of Paul is being played by Sean.
It's like I left it on my counter for a week. It's a Kavrichka burger.
Now do the chef.
What do you mean,
yes,
do the chef?
The Swedish chef.
Oh, that's another character I can do.
Exactly. Yeah. That's about how well I pronounce Gewurztraminer.
You can't say it.
No, I can't.
Doesn't matter. All right, Sean, what are you drinking?
I don't have an interesting story, except that when I went to go get a Coke, I ended up with two Diet Cokes. So
clearly you need some Lafroig.
Yeah, and I put vodka in this, so I have some Skol vodka.
Oh.
And some Diet Coke.
Oh, shit.
And
I see, I'm the one who's keeping it classy with the single malt whiskey in my Diet Coke.
Thank goodness for Julia. She keeps it real around here.
Jen has 1 week old, which is worse. Jen's Seriously? 1 week old wine or my Diet Coke
with vodka.
I feel like Diet Coke with vodka is at least like a sorority girl drink.
Which is so fitting for me because I've had skinny girl vodka on this show.
That is true. I feel like, honestly, though, I'm sorry to every single whiskey purist who is listening right now and just cringing when they think about me drinking my delicious, delicious smoky Diet Coke.
But your enjoyment of it makes everything better.
It does. But, like, you should have seen Moss is over in the other room, and when I said I'm keeping it classy with my single malt whiskey and Diet Coke, he just about died.
Okay, when you put it that way...
All right. Well, we should probably take... Wait, what the fuck? I just looked on the page. It says it was nominated for an Oscar.
I'm guessing that must be, like, costumes or special effects.
Oh, God, please tell me it's...
Because that's...
Best music for original song.
Okay.
Oh, I feel totally justified in one of my likes.
But now I have to know which song. Which song was
it? It was Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now. It was a number one hit.
No, shush! Okay, well, we should take a moment. We should actually explain what this movie is about, since we are watching 1987's Mannequin. And I'm going to let Jen do it because she's really desperate to do this.
Can I do it?
Go, Jen.
So
what's
this movie is about a man who has serious psychological problems, and he thinks a mannequin is real. And it inspires him to make super cool window displays, because everybody knows that window displays make the mall. I mean, seriously. That's the only reason people shop anywhere in the 1980s. And then at the end of the movie, she becomes, you know, actual real. But I'm still pretty much convinced that this is just a movie about a man with serious problems.
Okay, well, you left some important details out.
No, I didn't.
Okay, you left some details that the film thought were important, but then didn't bother to explain in any logical manner.
That's why I'm not going to bother mentioning them, and they're going to come up in the 5x5s.
Fair enough. All right, well, I think that pretty much covers it. He's a loser who falls in love with a mannequin.
Exactly.
And for some
reason...
Serious issues. So, shall we go to our 5x5s?
Let's.
All right. Jen, you're first up. Your first like.
Oh, my first like. Let me think. Since I didn't actually write any likes or dislikes tonight.
Of course.
My first like has got to be Estelle Getty, who I just played in a skit. Horribly, I might add. But it's always a joy to see her in a film, even if she's only in it for a total of 5 minutes throughout the entire thing.
To be fair, she's got very little good material to work with.
Okay, nobody has any good material to work with, so really she's
That's
just
not
the
true. The
star.
Motorcycle gets some good moments.
The motorcycle, very well represented in the union, yes.
Yes. It gets to do a jump and has a car chase. It's good.
But no, she really, I mean, she doesn't have a lot to work with, and it's Estelle Getty. She shines through pretty much anything that she does, and she's wonderful and brilliant, and I love her.
Yeah, well, I'll parrot that by making it a little bit thicker than what you gave.
There's nothing thicker than that in this
movie. No. I will say that despite the raging, terrible, horrid sexism of this film, which I'm sure Julia will probably open up with when we get to dislikes, because she will have many things to say, as do I, I will say that I did appreciate that even though it failed miserably at this, it put Estelle Getty's character as a woman in charge of a large company in opposition to a douchebag man in charge of a company, and then had her be much smarter than that guy because she wasn't an asshole. So I will say that.
Agreed.
Yeah. That's one of my likes. Julia, what about you?
All right, I'll bring my Estelle Getty like to the front as well. Sweet. So basically, I love the fact that she owns this store and actually has power throughout the movie. Like, she is actually a pretty good female character. She makes her own decisions. She doesn't let people talk her into things that she doesn't like. And she's basically like, hey, you saved my life. I'll give you a job, which is a totally reasonable line of thought, honestly. And then when other people are like, we should close the store, she's like, no, actually, I'm going to let the guy who saved my life and seems to be making good window displays that for some reason get crowds of people to gather around the store, because that's totally how window displays work. I'm going to make him run the store, actually, and not take your advice to fire him. So, like, she totally has agency. She's a cool woman with a store, and she's endearing.
Indeed.
Yeah, probably the only endearing character in this film.
I will talk more about other things later.
Excellent. No, actually, I think Rex, or whatever the dog's name is, he's pretty endearing.
Aw, poor Rex. Poor Rex.
I also liked Terminator. He was cute.
Terminator?
Let's save those for other likes, because like we're getting into other likes.
Okay. Alright, well, let's jump to dislikes. We went through that one mighty quick, so let's go to our first dislike. We'll start with you, Jen.
I'm going to go with a big one.
Uh-oh.
I truly, truly despised the 10-minute, it seemed like, montage of fashion and horrible 80s pop music.
Okay, well, I disagree with you about the second part, but the first part's totally valid.
I totally disagree with both of you. That was one of the best parts of the movie.
I had pain. Excruciating.
But are we talking the part where, like, he's playing the guitar in the elevator?
Yeah, I don't know so much if it was necessarily the fashion display, because that was like, oh, okay, what are you going to do in a mall?
Oh, the part where they just, like, decided to have a music video for, like, what is it, Belinda Carlisle? It's just like, what is even happening here?
Yeah, no, that's it. That's actually the only good part of the movie.
The song made my ears bleed. I don't know what's happening here. But I will tell you that the entire movie, I was like, all of this soundtrack, no matter how bad it is so much better than the soundtrack for A Talking Cat.
True. That's fair enough.
A Talking Cat?
So you hated the montage in the middle of the movie, Jen.
I hated the middle. It was like right in the beginning.
No, it wasn't. The one where he's playing guitar is towards the middle.
Whatever, everything blurred together, and all I know is that it made my ears bleed.
Did you watch it more than once and then, like, get edit in out of order because you fell asleep?
No,
okay. I figured, because that's liable to happen with you.
I watched part of it at work, and then I watched the rest at home that way.
Okay, that's fair enough. Okay, so you hated the montage.
Hated it.
Despised it. That's very sad. Well, what about you, Julia?
Okay, so what do I about my first dislike? Do you want me to start tackling the women thing? I guess I
Please.
Will go ahead. All right, because no. Like there's so much here.
Oh God,
to unpack.
Yes.
So like basically, for as much as I love Estelle Getty and Mrs. Timkins is a great character with agency, every other woman in the movie gets nothing. You have Andrew McCarthy's girlfriend who is basically just kind of like nags him, and then when it turns out that he's actually like a hotshot window display designer, she just wants to like headhunt him for the other side. And
God, yeah.
Women don't talk to each other. Kim Cattrall's character, like the whole arc of her character is that she left ancient Egypt by magic because she didn't want to be forced to marry a camel dung salesman. And she like wanted better rights for women. So she decides to stay in the 20th century where everyone is sexist so that she can support a kind of dweeby white guy who doesn't actually do much. and like help inspire him to make window displays.
Yeah, okay. Let's kind of expand beyond that.
Like, he's supposed to be an artist, and he gets fired from every single job because he tries to make it art.
Right.
Okay, so this is going to be two of my dislikes in one right now.
But then when he gets told that he has, like, the charge of the art department at a store, he's like, I don't know how to do art. I'm like, well, then what do you know how to do? Because the whole time we saw your opening sequence, you're supposed to be an artist. But Kim Cattrall, who is, like, some sort of magical time-traveling woman, is like,
she's an art fair.
I love you, even though I don't know you at all. And I believe you can do it.
Can I cut it in for a moment?
Okay.
I think what makes this worse, like, the really on 2 points. You have the fact that not only does it not pass the Bechdel test, obviously, it specifically disallows itself from ever passing it because the main female is a freaking mannequin who therefore cannot talk to anybody but a male. She only exists because of him. It's like Twilight all over again.
It's actually not true, though. Horribly, this movie does pass the Bechdel test because of the horrible scene. The horrible scene in the beginning where she's in Egypt and she's talking to her mom. And they're not just talking about the camel dung salesman. They're talking about her future.
That's true.
And so, like, they have a whole scene with dialogue. It's terrible, and I really hate that opening. But that's
okay. So they briefly pass the test.
It does qualify. They have like a few minutes of conversation, and it's not all just about a dude.
Kind of,
but I feel like the whole conversation is funneled through the necessity for her to marry to even have a future.
Right.
Which the first.
That doesn't disqualify it. That doesn't disqualify it at all.
So it passes
because they're not talking about like how great her father is or how terrible the dung salesman is. They're talking about how she needs to get married and how mom got married and she needs to get married because that's what women do.
Okay, so it passes, and just as you made the point that the reason she makes the wish is so that she can have more agency in her life, it throws all of that away so that she can become a character who only exists in the eyes of a male.
Pretty much, yeah. Right? Yeah, and only in the eyes of, like, one man at a time.
One man, right, first. And then second, she allows him to steal all credit for her creations.
Yeah,
for
she doesn't even just allow it. She encourages it. Like, she doesn't want anything for herself. She just wants to support him. And I think that's just, like, you say you want more rights for women, and then, like, if you could have had any rights, you gave them up.
Yeah. Well, okay, so this is one of my dislikes, which is that this film is basically just, like, a long sea of just sexist bullshit. And I'm not going to talk about Kim Cattrall's character because, there is no narrative arc. She just sort of magically appears, and it's not really clear why, but that's a whole other issue. I actually want to talk about Roxy.
Okay, yeah. Well, so this is actually...
Can we talk about that next?
I feel like that actually might get into my second dislike that has to do with women, and I want to save it as a separate item, but...
Oh, no.
So my separate item, I will just say up front now, the next thing I'm going to talk about is sexual harassment, but if you want to talk about Roxy apart from that, go for it.
No, because that's all I want to talk about.
Okay, let's
wait for the next round because I want to talk about that in a separate
item.
That's
my dislike.
Well, pick a different one for right now. You've got 5 of them.
Oh, fuck. I didn't write.
You can't just limit
yourself.
You
didn't write them down either?
No, I had like a rant prepared, and then I didn't go on it. Because like I stood up in my apartment after watching this and walked for about 5 minutes and ranted at myself. But how much I hate this movie.
You get to do that on the next dislike.
No, I won't. I can never get it. Okay.
You know what? Just go ahead and do it.
No. We'll save it. I will say that I despise James Spader in this movie. I fucking hate his character.
You're supposed to despise him.
No, but not in the way that I want. Like, I just, like, I hate that James Spader is in this film so that he ruins Stargate for me. Because I will never be able to watch Stargate the same again.
Oh,
I'll always
God.
Look at it and go, oh my gosh, where is his comb over and bad glasses and ridiculous...
You know what's funny, though? is that somehow this character is like the Stargate character's predecessor.
I just don't understand how you guys didn't think James Spader was super creepy all the time before this.
Because
as far as I can tell, James Spader exists to be a super creepy guy. And in Stargate, they somehow try to pretend he's not. But, like, everybody knows James Spader is super creepy, right?
No.
No.
I saw this movie, and now I think he's super creepy.
I feel like
he hangs around underneath my bed and watches me when I sleep.
I was like, James Spader's in this movie. Well, he's super creepy. And then I was like, oh, good. They have him playing a super creepy character because he's super creepy.
At least in this film, they kept the whole thing where he has allergies because he just sounds like it the whole time.
I like how they gave him glasses that made him creepier.
I know, right? He's got this,
you're
like...
You're so mean to James Spader.
He deserves it for this film, though. He should have read the script and gone, I don't care how early in my career this is. It's not worth it.
I like James Spader. I just think he's super creepy. I mean, it's like...
Oh my god, he's playing Ultron in Avengers Age of Ultron.
Amazing.
Oh my god.
But unfortunately, that's ruined because Mannequin is now in my consciousness. So, I will always think, like, I'll just hear him going, we're Mr. Timken. Yeah. That's... Get it out of my head.
Like.
All right, let's go to second like. Jen, please go.
I don't actually have one.
Make it up.
I'm going to go with Felix, the Night Watchman.
Really? Really?
Yep. I'm going with him.
Man. Oh, come on.
It's horrible and hilarious. He's still the only person who, like, knows what's going on, even if he's a moron and crazy and obsessed with his dog. And he takes him around in a little, you know, wagon, which is adorable. But it's G.W. Bailey, and he was amazingly brilliant in the Police Academy movies. He's essentially playing exactly the same character in this film, and so I could have like a little bit of joy going, Police Academy, was a fun movie while watching this.
No. Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Jen. Jen.
Oh, I'm sorry. Was there something else to actually like about this movie? If so, I missed it.
Oh, no. I've got one for you.
Fabulous.
But we got to go to Julia first.
So all right. So, Julia. My second like is that this movie is 80s-tastic.
Damn it. You took mine.
It came out in 1987, and it is utterly 80s in every way. That has amazing costumes. I love that Illustra is like the big department store, and you can tell it's amazing because it has like all the neon lights. Like, I don't even understand how that works, but apparently that's super trendy. And then like you got everybody's like high powered career people, and it's corporate espionage because that's totally 80s-tastic. And then the clothing, oh my god, the glasses.
The glasses.
How many times can Hollywood Montrose change into more ridiculous glasses? But like, yeah, and the soundtrack, everything about it. Like, even when it wasn't playing pop songs, when it was just playing like synthesizer score, the synthesizer score was so like ridiculously terrible, cheesy 80s synthesizer score.
Okay, well, here's why I have to disagree with you. The fact that this movie is set in the 80s is the greatest thing about the whole movie.
Yeah, no, I... What do you disagree with me about?
It's not cheesy. It's wonderful. It's like the greatest music ever.
No, it is cheesy. It's also wonderful.
No. This is what experimental art looks like.
No, actually, experimental art is more like Pee Wee Herman's Big Adventure.
Yeah, exactly. This is more like an homage to the 80s.
This is
like,
absolutely trying to be the height of like popular 80s culture.
Yeah, I don't.
It's high art. That's all I'm saying. This is better than Picasso. It's better than like Rembrandt. This is like the greatest moment in human culture right now.
I don't agree with that, but I do think it is an amazing, amazing artifact of the time and something that archaeologists should save forever.
Oh God,
I agree. I totally agree.
Now.
I think the whole story of Mannequin should be removed, but we should have like an exhibit. Where it's just the costumes and the sets
and the music.
Yeah.
And the actors, to be honest.
Yeah,
like,
and the
preserved
actors.
Preserved as like wax figures, like from
House
of Wax.
You mean like mannequins?
Oh,
Oh my god, I'm really gonna shoot myself now.
Also, like, how many Kim Cattrall mannequins are there out there? Because they had to have made several for this, right?
Somebody buy one? Does someone have, like, a Kim Cattrall, like,
mannequin? Just don't go down that road, because I don't want to know what they do with their Kim Cattrall mannequin. Just don't do that.
They dress it up, obviously. You pervert.
In 80s costumes.
In 80s costumes. What other reason could you want to own a Kim Cattrall mannequin, life-size mannequin?
Having just watched this movie, I'm surprised you can even ask.
Right?
Because that's like all they do the entire movie long is talk about the perverted things you could do with a mannequin.
Yeah.
That's true.
Can we move on?
I'm pause. I gotta... My damn cat is doing something I don't want him to do again. One sec.
My brain is bleeding. You guys caused me pain.
I caused you pain?
Yeah.
How?
Because you like how 80s this was.
How can you not like the 80s? I mean, like...
I have no problem with the 80s, but when it's this overblown...
Then it makes it more amazing. It's like going to Disneyland. It is.
I'm sorry. Julia is totally right. The 80s was the greatest decade in the history of mankind.
Okay. Agree to disagree?
I mean, there's no disagreement.
I agree that it's the greatest decade in the history of mankind, but I do think that this is an amazing example of 80s aesthetic.
This is... I think a lot of other films were, too.
I would just say that I watched this film, and though I hate almost everything about this film, I did wish that I was in the 80s.
What? I'm sorry.
I'm a 90s child. The 90s were terrible. The only good thing out of the 90s was, like, Bill Clinton. That's basically it. Name one good thing about the 90s.
Clueless.
Yeah, I know. That's a terrible movie.
No, you are so wrong. That is a great movie.
Clueless is a great movie.
And it has amazing 90s things in it.
Like what? Name one
Clueless
great...
Clueless is like the 90s version of Mannequin, according to you guys.
No, Clueless is terrible. Name one great 90s thing. I agree with
it. Clueless is amazing, and it's a great 90s thing. Also, there was plenty of actually good music in the 90s. There were plenty of terrible things, too, but, like, there were good things.
Okay. Here we go. Name one good thing about the 90s. One specific thing.
I said Clueless. Just because you don't agree with me doesn't mean that I'm wrong.
I don't understand why you would select Clueless.
Also, I would suggest...
I'm going with Nirvana.
I'm going to go with Liz Phair's Exile in Guyville, which is amazing.
I don't even know what that is.
It's a fantastic album from 1993.
I'm going to go with Robin Hobb's books, which started...
Literature doesn't count.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're just going to discount a big section of culture.
Yeah, because that's not fair.
I hope you're recording this, because
of course it totally needs
to go on the air.
Also, yeah. Ace of Base happened in the 90s. How can you hate Ace of Base?
Oh, I saw the sign.
Yeah, see? You like it.
I saw the sign. Okay, there were like one good thing.
One of many. There were actually good things in the 90s. There were bad things in the 90s too, but there were great things in the 90s as well.
I'm sorry. The only thing that I think was good about the 80s was that the Berlin Wall came down. So I don't know.
There were good and bad things about every decade, guys. I'm just going to lay it out there.
Yeah, but the 80s were amazing.
In some ways.
Great music. Rock music was still good back then.
No, it wasn't.
Yes, it was. Then Nirvana came around and destroyed it all.
Okay. Or improved it.
Or made it worse because it made it possible for generations of jerk faces in their garages to play four chords and not learn how to play guitar like a normal person.
Oh, yeah, so that's why Nirvana happened before the 90s.
Right, exactly.
Oh, it certainly happened before, but they weren't important.
Of course not. Don't talk to Sina ever again, because she'll massacre you.
She's a Nirvana fan?
No, she's a four chord fan because she's a big punk fan. And yeah.
Punk music existed before grunge.
Yes, exactly. Way before grunge. And had very few chords.
And had plenty of people who didn't really know how to play instruments.
Most.
Here's the difference.
There's
a difference. There's a big difference.
What's the difference?
I think it's fair to say that punk musicians see themselves not as making music that is melodic, but making a different sort of music. Whereas grunge music is we're presenting you melodies.
that are really, really bad they made.
And some of the grunge music is actually, you know, pretty decent. And some of it sucks. And pop music in general, that's like always how it is. If you go look at, if you look at pop music throughout the decades, you're going to find some songs that are awesome and some songs that suck. And a lot of times you've forgotten the songs that suck because they don't get airplay as much after they were first.
Whoa, sorry.
What the hell, Jen? Are you playing 90s music?
I was trying to watch porn, but it didn't work.
And on that note, why don't we go to dislikes?
Dislikes.
Yep, second dislike, Jen, go.
Start us all off on the rant.
Oh, God, fuck this movie.
Okay, so I'm just going to put it out there. You guys can obviously just go off, because I think all I have to say is that one of the worst things about the 80s was the overcharged sexual harassment that was occurring.
Oh, God, why?
All right, so since I didn't let you rant last time, Sean, I'm going to let you get the rant out of your system first, and I'll just wake up after you.
Okay, so there was a moment at which I got in this movie where I just had to stop it. Like, I literally had to stop the movie. I was like, I need a fucking break from this shit. And that's the moment at which I think it's the third time when Roxy is basically has the like weird Spanish. I'm assuming he's Spanish.
Armand.
Yeah, Armand, who basically says he wants to put his dick in her. And, you know, almost in this exact language. And I think it's the time when they're in the department store, and they're like hiding behind the counter, and he's like, I think we could have great sex on the floor in the dark. And it's like, really? You guys are committing espionage right now, and you feel like that's the time to like be like, let's play with penises. And I got to a point where I'm just like, how, like, I understand that his character is supposed to be funny. However, nothing about him is remotely funny. He is a caricature not only of himself, but he is the most offensive character, and the things that happen around Roxy are some of the most disgusting things I think I've seen in a lot of movies here. And I think that there's a difference between, I know that, Julie, you disagree, that though I will agree that the treatment of women in the Transformers movies is pretty freaking terrible. This is one of those times where I'm just like, this is trying to convince us that it's okay to laugh at sexism, even though this is not laughable sexism. This is not like satire. This is not. It is so painfully embedded within this corporate structure. She gets sexually harassed by her boss, who basically touches her in all these inappropriate ways and implies basically that he's going to like let her move up in the ladder and then he's going to fuck her. She gets sexually harassed by this guy who like follows her around and is like creepy. And it's what drove me nuts about this character is like she begins as a character who is like really torn between worlds. She's like a woman in a corporate world that is obviously run by men primarily, but she's also kind of dating this like dweeby artistic dude who unfortunately in the beginning of the film is like a giant loser, but whatever, right? And so she's like torn between these two worlds, and then you think maybe she's like standing up for herself and she's like, I'm not going to keep dating this guy who's not really good for me, and I'm going to fight for the top and I'm going to become like a CEO of a company. But then she's just like her character completely switches for me. She ceases to be somebody who maybe is conflicted or to person who's just disaffected. She's just sort of removed and becomes like this just object thing that they just all like fawn on. And it gets even worse. And the moment at which I just wanted to like burn all copies of this movie was when they save the mannequin and the like weird janitor or whatever like guy who helps break things down. I don't know what he does for a living. But he comes in and he grabs Roxy and he just starts kissing her. And then doesn't stop when she's like protesting. At that moment, just I was so angry. I was so angry at that moment, and I'm just this fucking movie, and its sexism is just so ridiculous. Fuck this
You've
movie.
Actually somehow convinced me that this whole film is a brilliant sort of attack on sexual harassment and sexism.
It's not.
I know it's not, but at the same time, The whole idea that she does, you're right, she does start out that way. Armand is absurd and disgusting, and I think people recognize him as that very easily, not just now, but earlier. And I have to disagree completely in that this is somehow a worse display of sexism, or like a more offensive display of sexism, because I think it's actually, because it's so downplayed in the Transformers movies, it's much more insidious and dangerous. This is like, okay, we recognize that sexism is fucking ridiculous, and this whole idea is ridiculous, and this guy is disgusting, and obviously this woman shouldn't be putting up with it, and we're not sure why she is, but we are sure because she wants to move up in the corporate world, and there's problems with that. That's all in there, whereas you can't even see good most of the time in the Transformers movie.
False. The first Transformer movie, she has one incredible moment in which she basically takes action, and she goes and, like, her and Bumblebee go blow shit up.
And in this movie, she has one incredible moment when she slaps the guy and says, this is purely a professional relationship. Does one incredible moment make up for an entire film of, like, taking it?
The thing is, in Mannequin, she says no and no and no so many times that it's so blatantly obvious that she is being sexually harassed. And in some cases in, like, really, really, really overt and horrible ways, and in some cases in more subdued ways.
Right.
And so she's constantly saying no. She's constantly saying stop. And yet this film constantly reinforces that somehow there are no repercussions for men's behavior for sexual harassment.
That's because there weren't any in the 80s.
Well, that sucks for the 80s. I'm sorry.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I'm saying it's almost brilliant in the fact that it does. It portrays her, the mannequin. It's a freaking mannequin. She can't pass the Bechdel test because she's a freaking mannequin. She has no agency whatsoever except in the eyes of a man. And the same thing is happening with Roxy. So you could actually put this up as a great ripping apart of sexism in the corporate world.
I never would,
because it's a really bad movie.
I don't see it as ripping.
Do I get to actually talk about this ever?
Yes.
Please.
Okay. Go for it, Julie.
So while I applaud Jen's desperate trying to make this movie somehow a feminist movie, I'm going to have to disagree. Because here's what happens with Roxy. Basically, at first we see her as the girlfriend, and then she's the bad girlfriend because she dumps him because, oh my god, she's a competent woman who has a professional job, and her boyfriend can't even hold down a job making pizza because he has to make it into, quote, art, which is not art, and in fact doesn't get the pizza made.
Yep.
And he's like totally a loser, really.
Yeah, no, he is.
And so, but she's the bad girlfriend because she basically is, like, you know, not supporting him in his quest to not have a job that's a real job. And then we see her get horribly sexually harassed and assaulted. Like, she gets touched by her boss in inappropriate mm-hmm. ways all the time. And there was the first point when she and Armand are talking, and he's just horribly sexually harassing her and touching her and all of this other stuff. And I kind of looked at Moss, and because I made Moss watch this with me,
And I was like,
the thing is that this is supposed to be funny. Like, this scene is obviously something we're supposed to be laughing at because, haha, that's just how men are. And it's not actually funny. It's not funny at all. And it wasn't even funny in the context of the time. And it's certainly not actually sort of pointing out how bad sexual harassment is, because what happens over the course of the time is that she does start out saying no and hitting him. She hits him multiple times. But the thing is that it's not like she eventually hits him and he goes away. She hits him, and then eventually she realizes that he's actually probably a decent thing and she ought to sleep with him. So she does. God. And then the big joke is that he can't get it up. So that's supposed to be his comeuppance is that he can't get it up. But, like, the thing is that from Roxy's standpoint, she went from being disgusted with him to thinking, actually, he's probably the best I can get, and I kind of do like him because he's so aggressive. And then she's disgusted that he can't actually, you know, perform.
I wouldn't say that she ever likes him.
No, but like she agrees to go and sleep with him, and it's not because
it's entirely different things.
No, it's not because he's her boss. It's because she decides that she's going to do this. Now, honestly, he's disgusting. There is no way that she should want to sleep with him. And I will tell you an example of a movie that that is from the same time period. It came out in 1988, and is probably my favorite movie of all time. So I am totally biased, but. Big Business, starring Bette Midler and Lily Tomlin, has another thread that involves a guy trying to, like, kind of take liberties with somebody. And what happens in that arc is, like, she arguably does send mixed signals. And then in the end, when he tries to take advantage, she's like, no, and just punches him, and he doesn't get any. It's not like... she takes him to bed anyway because she feels bad for him, and then, like, he can't get it up. No, he gets punched in the face because, actually, you don't just get to be an asshole who tries to have sex with women who aren't into you. That's just not how it works.
And I just want to say one last thing on this, because and then maybe Jen, I don't know if you wanted to respond, but I also think that, as Julie was noting, and I think by implication, is that what seems to be Roxy standing up for herself in the beginning, and what I really hope was, like, here's a woman who's really, like, fighting in a world that is just sexist and shit, right? But who is going to stand up for herself, who's going to do what she believes is right for herself. I was really hoping as a secondary character we'd have that. But what ends up happening immediately after she leaves the loser boyfriend is the film basically undercuts her constantly. Mm-hmm. To the point that her character almost by necessity has to become somebody that we think of as villainous. When really, honestly, in total truth, in the beginning, I was totally sympathetic to Roxy. Because I looked at her and I thought, God, she is with this guy who is a loser. He's, like, using her. Maybe he doesn't realize he's using her, but he's using her. He can't hold down a job. He's like, he just sucks. He's terrible. And so she leaves him, and I'm like, yeah, she made the right choice there, right? It's for herself. She's dealing with all this crap. Maybe she's going to be this really sympathetic character, but then it just breaks her down. And by the end, she's just basically like a caricature. She's like an object, a thing. She ceases in the opposite way where I think the film wants us to think that Kim Cattrall's character becomes a character, although she doesn't. Where in the opposite way, Roxy begins as a character, and then she becomes
a mannequin who is actually a flesh person. And it's not that it's trying to make us sympathetic to her and her plight. It's basically telling us, you know, she deserves it because she's a bad person, and she's a bad person because, like, she didn't stay with her boyfriend, and then she was too interested in having a high-powered job, and objects. yeah, but the movie isn't trying to get us to think that that's a bad thing. The movie is trying to get us to think that she shouldn't get to have a good outcome.
I actually absolutely agree with all that. I just love playing the devil's advocate. A. B. I still think that Transformers is more dangerous.
I think that they are both really bad. And I think that I agree that Transformers as a series is a much worse series just in general because of all of the things that it does that are super terrible.
Okay. I mean, I guess.
And I also think that, like, I think this movie really normalizes sexual harassment and acts like it's not a problem. Like, there's other stuff where... when he first starts working at the department store, and they're like, we're going to make you a stock boy and you're going to have to put away panties. And then he, like, ends up going into the women's dressing room by accident. And everybody is sort of like, oh, really? That was an accident, huh? But it's not like you're a super creep. It's like, sure, we all understand. Guys will try to get looks in the women's dressing rooms. Like, just boys will be boys. And it's like, you're having really freaky sex with a mannequin, but we're just going to be like, okay. Even before he's the vice president.
You guys are going to hate me again in a minute for my next, like...
God damn it. By the way. Jesus, Jen. All right. Do you think we mind this one pretty well, guys?
I think so.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get some funny. Jen, you better have a funny for third like.
I think it's fucking hilarious, personally.
God.
So, as we've just been talking about how freaking atrocious the character Armand is, right? And
God. Yeah.
Duke, you mentioned specifically the scene in which they're crawling around in the mall. That, however, happens to be the scene of the best joke in the entire film.
Oh, what?
Can I show you something in your size?
I need a cricket sound right here because honestly, that joke is fucking terrible.
Yes! And yet, the best joke in the entire movie! It was so awful! And it actually took me a moment to be like, oh, burn! And I loved it. I loved it. It was brilliant and yet atrocious and offensive and everything else. But at the same time, I was like, why haven't I heard that one before? That one's brilliant.
I don't know. I thought that the best joke would have been the like PTSD bulldog.
No.
No, you didn't find that? Okay. Well, I mean, honestly, this movie isn't very funny.
Slightly adorable. But not funny.
Not funny. No. Well, the crickets are chirping for you, Jen.
Something in your size. I'm sorry. It's like the worst come-on in the history of ever. Hilarious. Done.
Yeah. Crickets.
It was a struggle to find things to like. I'm just saying.
All right, Julia. You need to save us from this travesty of a joke.
All bad, right, Jen. So, bad. So my third like is Hollywood Montrose.
No.
Wait, because he's also my third dislike.
Okay,
but,
good.
But he's my third like because Hollywood Montrose is both gay and a person of color. He is openly gay. The movie totally acknowledges it throughout. Like, he has a boyfriend who has dumped him. And it's not even like
Albert.
He's just like... it's not like he's an effeminate guy who could be straight. But if you're in the know, he might be gay. No, like, he's straight up gay. And he is super sassy. Like, there are occasionally times when he has lines that I actually laughed at. And there are lots of different kinds of ways to be gay, and there are lots of different gay guys in the world. But sure. That is totally a mode of gay boy. And Hollywood Montrose owns it. Also, he has this amazing wardrobe. And I don't know where he gets all his glasses, but what the hell? Like, those glasses, right? And who could wear those glasses aside from Hollywood Montrose? Because I don't know anyone else who could wear those. So, like, he is actually a reasonable person. He's a fleshed-out character. He has his own opinions and wants and needs, and that's cool. So mm-hmm. Applause for there being... at this time when, like, honestly, there aren't that many openly gay characters in movies. And he's not a villain, you know? He's not, like, he doesn't die, and he's not a villain, and he doesn't die, and he's a black dude, too.
And he saves the day at the end.
So yeah, basically, yeah. Hollywood Montrose is, I'm conflicted about him, but there are good points to him, and I do appreciate those good points.
Fair enough.
Which is one of the reasons why I think this movie is head and shoulders above Transformers, because there is no character that is even as close to nuanced and real person in Transformers as Hollywood Montrose.
Oh, man.
Yeah, think about that for a minute, because it's sobering, isn't it?
No, it just makes me hate this movie more.
Because it's better than Transformers?
No, I just hate this movie so much.
Well, that's reasonable.
Here's the thing. I came into this movie like, I've seen this movie before. I remember it wasn't so bad. It was all right. You know, it wasn't good, but it was like, you know, serviceable as a film. And then I went to watch it and I was like, maybe I haven't seen this before. Because it's getting increasingly not good.
And then that's your third dislike.
I have never seen this movie before the other night. And I, like, Moss was like, what's it about? And I'm like, I don't know, a mannequin who comes to life or something. And then it turned out to be much, much... horrible.
But it's like a romantic comedy idea. The whole, like, okay, it's silly, but it could work as a romantic comedy. Like, oh, okay, my mannequin comes to life, and I'm like this artistic weirdo guy, and I fall in love with my mannequin. Like, okay, sure, we can make a funny thing about that. But this is just not it. Like, they just fell way short.
Yes, they did.
Yeah. But in any case, I guess I should get my third like out of the way.
Yes.
I'm just going to throw this out there because it is obviously the only true good thing about this movie, which is that Starship does a theme song. That is all.
I hope that's all.
Yeah. Never gonna stop us now. No?
No? I gotta say, I'm not a big fan of that song, but it was was a big Billboard hit, and it stayed on the charts for a long time, so you were not alone in loving that song.
We built this city.
I like that song a lot better. That's a better Starship song. I realized, though, the fact that Starship had a song in this movie means that this movie has something in common with the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Oh, that's right, because they're in that one. And the Holiday Special is still better.
That is exactly what I said.
Stop talking about this movie.
Moss was like, wow, so is this better than the Holiday Special? I was like, no, I think I'm going to go with the Holiday Special over this.
Yeah, I would rather watch the Holiday Special. I would rather watch Wookiees masturbating.
I was just going to say, I would rather watch Grandpa's Wookiee porn sequence again. Than
humanoid porn. Oh, it's so wrong. And what's really creepy is there is sex tape at the end of Mannequin somewhere. Somewhere in Illustri or whatever the hell it's called, there is a sex tape of him having sex with a mannequin.
That's horrible. Stop. Just don't. No, that's horrible.
There is.
Okay.
Moving on. Third dislike, Jen, go.
Dislike. Yeah. I genuinely dislike the fact that a movie based on the Pygmalion myth and starring a time traveler, potentially, is this horrible and has nothing to do with either of those things. The end.
Oh, God. Okay, so this is going to be related to one of my dislikes, I'm guessing.
I hope so, because that's all I'm saying. Because I can't even muster, enough hatred right now. Well, enough passion of hatred. It's just, a dull, aching hatred of this movie.
Julia, is yours related to this?
No, mine is about Hollywood Montrose. So go ahead if you have something related to this.
Okay. Well, I will say that for a film that didn't need all of this silly Egyptian weird crap, it didn't need it to work. But the fact that it included all of this stuff and then never explains a freaking thing about how any of this happened... I don't understand.
Totally explains it.
So that is actually going to get into a different dislike that I have later down the line.
Okay. Can I? Should I stop?
Go ahead. I'll just talk about it at a different point.
Okay. So
I have to disagree that it doesn't explain it, though. It totally explains it. It just doesn't make any sense.
That's what I mean. It doesn't make any sense how any of it. Okay, so she somehow mysteriously disappears from Egyptian times for no clear reason.
The gods grant her a wish.
Okay, so, and then she ends up as a mannequin in 1980s.
That's
one of the appearances she's made.
Before that, she also, knows Michelangelo and some other people. So, Jen, how do you actually,
Because
how do you
she's
reconcile
trying
it?
To find her time, the time in which she can have agency.
So how do you believe that she comes across in the other periods? Is she a mannequin in those periods, or is she
in Michelangelo, she's a statue. In Christopher Columbus, I have no idea. But with Michelangelo, I would imagine she's a statue. Because it is. It's the Pygmalion. It's the Pygmalion myth. So obviously she has to be a creation in every single time.
Does she always look like Kim Cattrall?
Of course she does. It's Kim Cattrall. You can't ever look like anybody else.
Okay, that's all I wanted to ask.
God, Kim Cattrall, she's so beautiful.
The gods inspire an artist or something to make creations that look like Kim Cattrall once every age. And she comes to life. Hello?
Yeah, no, I understand.
Okay, sorry. Duke cut off, so suddenly I was like, where is everybody?
I am wondering where he is. Are you there, Sean?
I'm sorry, my cat knocked over water. My cat is like a crazy psycho today, and I didn't want to stop the recording, so I missed whatever was the last 30 seconds. All right,
that
pleasures.
Doesn't matter. Okay, so are you still talking about the Egyptian thing?
I just didn't understand, and none of it makes any sense, and I just don't understand, why couldn't they have just stopped with the Egyptian thing, and they just, started with, somehow the mannequin comes to life, and, just leave it at that. Just no need to explain it. Just, like, the mannequin comes to life because maybe he, like, really likes the mannequin because it's sexy and it just comes to life. I don't know. It's just,
don't know why this wasn't a Pinocchio myth.
Yeah, like, maybe he creates it and it comes to life, and that's,
I'm
like, it's
boy.
One of those weird moments, like, maybe Santa flew down from the skies and was like, oh, grant wishes, ho, 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 and, like, then it came to life, and then there was an elf monkey somewhere, and that would be the movie, like, that he would, like, the elf monkey would be trying to say, like, hey, guy, the thing is alive, and you should, like, kiss it on New Year's Eve, because then, like, mistletoe and life, and
how
then
you turn this into a Christmas movie? I don't
because
understand.
Because it would be better as a Christmas movie.
I happen to agree. They should have just cut off the whole Egyptian thing and not had it in the slightest bit whatsoever, but they went with it because they're dumb. They also decided that they wanted to have a Jewish woman play an Egyptian, kind of hilarious.
So I'll just come back to this in another dislike. Can I talk about Hollywood Montrose now?
Yes.
Okay. Hollywood Montrose. So I talked about all the reasons why I liked him. Then there's the other bits of it, which are that he is, like, one of the worst stereotypes ever. And he is obviously told to play up the Queenie camp as high as possible, to the point that, like, I don't actually know any queens who could be that over the top all the time. And he doesn't get to have a happy ending. Like, he has an ex-boyfriend, so we know he's for sure gay. He doesn't get to be with a boyfriend, though. Like, Albert has left him. And why has Albert left him? Because he is a clingy, weeping mess who, like, has sobbing fits for no reason all the time. And then, like, clings to a random guy that he's never really met before who is his coworker. And is like, why did he leave me? And, like, when I say clings, I mean grabs onto him and wants to be held. And this is someone he met, like, 20 minutes before, which is ridiculous and not actually a way that humans behave. And, like, on top of that, he is the artistic genius, but he's not allowed to actually be the artistic genius because the main character, who is a loser, somehow gets to go in knowing nothing about making window displays and suddenly, like, transform everything because he's in love with a piece of wood. And basically Hollywood Montrose is just like, oh, I have to learn from you, like, little guy that I've never met before, even though I have my own artistic visions and make my own amazing outfits. So, like, he basically, it undermines everything that's cool about him because he doesn't get to do that. And then there's all this casual bigotry aimed at him too, where, like, he goes there's a scene where, like, Andrew McCarthy goes into the woman's bathroom with the mannequin because he wants to tell her that he's been promoted to vice president and he's super excited. And at this point, like, she comes to life and he talks to her, and then all the other women are outside the bathroom eavesdropping on him. And I guess, like, even though they hear her voice clearly, they're like, he's making the dummy talk. Like, he's doing a surprisingly good imitation of a woman. And then, like, Hollywood Montrose has to go in there to talk to him because he has something wrong. I forget what it is. And he goes into there. And what I took away from that scene was that all the women outside were like, who's talking? And they're like, I don't know, either the dummy or the fairy. And that's not, like, a bad thing at all. It's just, like, everybody, of course, is going to talk about how, haha, we know he's a fairy. And it's totally cool to use derogatory terms about this guy that we work with and are supposed to respect. And again, it's one of those things where it just really normalizes casual bigotry and casual sexual harassment and all this stuff that is running throughout the movie that I don't think is actually supposed to be demonizing any of it. It's just kind of like, we accept that that's how people are and that's how the world is and that's okay. And again, I have to bring up Big Business, where you actually have a gay couple who is a gay couple and they get to be a couple and they, like, have their little spats, but they're a couple and they love each other and they have a reasonable relationship and they're not over the top ridiculous and people respect them as the people that they work with. And that's something that, like, when I saw it in 1988, I didn't even realize. It took me a while. Like, when I was an adult, I rewatched it and I was like, holy crap, that couple was gay the whole time. Which I didn't know, but, you know, I would have known that about Hollywood Montrose, even if I'd seen it in 1987, because you can't not know it. And you can't not know it because he's a stereotype and people call it out and aim slurs at him. And that's not really cool. And also, like, I don't know. I will save the rest of it for the next one. But basically, while I love that he's a gay man and he's sassy and he's got an amazing wardrobe, I hate that the way that he gets treated and the material he has to work with.
Well, just to add a little levity to this, in case any folks didn't know, his first acting credit was in the Omen 2.
Yeah, the great thing about it is that I looked him up on IMDb and he has had a very long and fruitful acting career and mm-hmm. is still active, so that's awesome.
Yeah, he's actually done some pretty... He also was in a Buffalo Bill TV series in the 80s. Never saw it, but hey.
More importantly, he was on Designing Women.
That's right, he was.
Awesome!
And he was Anthony Bouvier?
Bouvier. Yep,
yeah.
That's the right name. I loved him.
Whoa, he was on there for 7 years.
Yeah.
Is that like, what was that? Was that like a soap opera?
Was Designing Women? Oh my god! It was a
comedy. It was a sitcom.
Holy crap.
Yeah, sitcom? It a sitcom? Okay.
It was like Golden Girls, but...
But it had Delta Burke in it.
Delta Burke. Oh my god, that show was amazing.
Yeah, you know what year I was born in, Jen?
Only like, what, 6 years after me? Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't old enough to watch that show.
You've watched Golden Girls, right?
No.
Oh, I think okay, the problem is that Designing Women's wasn't in syndication and didn't have a lot of reruns later. So Sean never saw.
No, I never saw it.
Like, pretty much, I saw Designing Women because my mom liked it. So, like, I was a kid, but my mom was watching it. And if I hadn't seen it when she was watching it, I wouldn't have seen it because it never was in reruns.
He's still a slightly over-the-top gay man. He's a fashion designer on the show.
Yeah, and,
for that era, I think he was the only... One of the very few gay characters in television.
Yeah, and like I said...
And people loved him.
Like I said, there are a lot of modes of being gay. There are lots of different ways to be gay, because gay men are just people like the rest of us.
Right.
And one of the ways that you can be gay is by being a super campy queen with a lot of attitude. And my God, he does it really well.
He does it brilliantly. Absolutely.
Yeah. Fair enough.
So and he did it for 2 movies. Just saying.
He was in the second Mannequin.
Yeah, so we can look forward to more of him in Mannequin 2 when we are forced to watch that.
It is on the list.
Oh, fabulous.
Yep. But that's not what we're watching next time, because next time we have had Mike Martinez select Highlander 2.
There can be only one. Oh, but it has a really good Queen song. That's like going to be the best thing. That's my like. I already know what my first like.
Oh, go Queen. Queen is great.
Isn't that the one that has... So that's the one that has A Kind of Magic in it, right? It's a kind of magic. Magic.
I don't remember.
I think that is. I think that's Highlander 2, because I think Highlander 1 has Princes of the Universe.
They both have Princes. The universe in it.
Yeah, so. but Highlander 2 has It's a Kind of Magic because it was written specifically for Highlander 2, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, nice.
Weird. Well, shall we go to Fourth Likes?
Yes.
All right, Jen, go.
I had one and I forgot what it was.
Of course.
Give me a moment to think of
whatever it. That is that your noise you're making should stop.
No, I'm going to do it for the rest. I'm typing.
She's really angry at us, so she's typing.
We love you, Paul!
So ridiculous.
I had a really hard time finding likes, and yet I found a lot of things amusing, and that's really what was kind of sad. So I'm going to go with... Sorry. I'm going to go with the reaction of people to the fact that he's talking to and sleeping with a mannequin. I found it highly amusing that they somehow just accepted it as part of his personality. And at one point, Hollywood Montrose says something about, you know, it's nice having someone weirder than I am. Which I get, except that it's this very sort of stodgy place. And granted, they're kind of going with, it was a stodgy place, but then he comes and he revives it with his youth and his vigor and his creativity. But
And his mannequin sex.
And mannequin sex.
And apparently his penchant for sleeping in piles of fur coats that he's taken out of the fur department and put on the floor.
And all of
and then
that
slept naked in.
Is okay.
And probably dead under things in.
And okay. And when people see that, they're just like, oh, hi, you're sleeping in a pile of fur coats naked.
How exactly does one clean fur coats?
Dragging his mannequin around. They just kind of go, oh, that makes sense. When he's in the bathroom making out with a mannequin, they go, oh, that makes sense. When he wakes up in a pile of fur coats naked, they go, oh, that makes sense. And they applaud him.
Well, they applaud him because he did something astonishing, supposedly.
Apparently, I'm not sure.
That gave me a Zardoz flashback because I was pretty sure maybe he had an erection, so they were applauding. Because remember in Zardoz when Sean Connery gets an erection and they all applaud?
To me, it was like they were applauding performance art. I mean,
yes,
it's
like, just
you know,
like in Zardoz when Sean Connery gets it up and they applaud.
God,
which makes me wonder if performance art was bigger than the 80s than I remember it being. I'm thinking it may have been.
I'm sorry, but when you said that phrase, I just went to a sexual innuendo. Performance art was bigger than the 80s.
And yet you don't find finding something in your size amusing. Come on, make up your mind.
It's bigger than the 80s. Is it in an orange diaper? How much cloth does it take to cover his larger than the 80s?
So, yes, I like the fact that creativity is applauded in this film.
Okie dokie. All right, Julia?
All right, so I was going to say that James Spader being creepy was alike, but we kind of already covered that earlier. Mm-hmm. I liked him being creepy, but I think instead I'll talk about how I actually really enjoyed seeing the insides of these department stores. I thought the sets were kind of great, and there's a BBC or ITV has a series called The Paradise, which is about an early department store, like in the end of the 1800s, and it's all about how like the department store is created, and there is like the main character who's good at displays and selling things that way, and that was kind of, I thought, okay, if The Paradise was set in the 1980s and they had to revive a department store, that's kind of what you'd get. And I kind of dug it. I kind of really liked the fact that you had the set of a department store with all sorts of crazy things in it to play with. And I really liked the wood paneling in the boardroom. Like, when they have their board meeting, that room is pretty gorgeous. I don't know why it's in a department store. It looks like it should be in, like, a historic town hall or courthouse, because I think there was, like, a portrait of George Washington on the wall or something. But it was really pretty. And I also really enjoyed the opposite atmosphere in Alestra, where it was just, like, everything's neon. And, like, the aisles are illuminated with neon. And there's all sorts of trendiness, which is really, really weird looking.
And mirrors
everywhere. Yeah. And so I was really kind of digging the sets of both of the stores. And I really enjoyed seeing what was going to pass as, like, a really exciting window display. Which I still don't believe that a crowd of onlookers on the street would actually gather to ooh and ah over a window display, but I enjoyed the fact that, like, we got to see what they were coming up with as exciting window displays.
Well, my like is actually related to this. Sorta. It is that I enjoyed the costumes.
Yeah, definitely. I think I covered that in my first, like, the 80s-tasticness.
Yeah, but
with you 100%.
Yeah, I love just the clothes they wear. Even when they're wearing, like, you know, like, they're just trying out all this stuff and they're just wearing all these different things. Like, I mean, there's at one point he's, like, dressed like a gangster and she's dressed like, I guess, like a 20s flapper girl, I guess, at one point almost.
Yeah, no, they totally go through, like, all kinds of different decades and looks.
This is the montage that Jen hates, but I loved it.
I loved it. It was hilarious.
I love the costume work. I feel this is one of the stronger points, is it does so much with costumes, of them wearing all kinds of different things and sleeping in various
cloth related items, and presumably doing other things inside of those things. But yeah, so I just really I like that, even though that mostly I hate this movie so much, and I'm very intoxicated right now because I've been drinking a lot. So yay. Okay.
So fourth dislike.
Fourth dislike, go Jen.
I'm gonna go with it. It's something obviously related to earlier, but I have to highlight it specifically. One of the things that I hate most about the character arc of the mannequin, of Emmy, is that she starts out as a woman who is interested in science and technology and invention, and that goes away completely after maybe a solid 2 minutes of it. And it was really like, you start out so hopeful. I think that's why it angered me as much as it did. She doesn't really mention it in the beginning. Suddenly it gets mentioned when she first meets the main character, whose name I totally forget right now. And she talks about it, and her face glows when she's talking about building things and, you know, how she built herself wings, and it's wonderful. And you have hope that, oh my goodness, this character could possibly, maybe she can make herself something, maybe she can join the world and become a great inventor. And then, no. Nothing. And
yeah.
It makes me really sad and angry, and it could have been inspirational, and yet just is one of those things that makes you go, well.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that I'd mentioned earlier, that I hated that whole magical setup with the Egyptian thing, because it doesn't make any sense in any other context. And so even though the irony is, if they had taken out that introductory scene, it would have made it better what they did to her character. And I say that not to suggest that somehow her character would have been a good character. It still would have been shit. But it would not have been like a complete... It's, again, this film does this thing where like it sets up interesting ideas about individual female characters and then just like pisses it away and just like shits all over and says, fuck that. We're not going to do any of that cool stuff that we could do as an interesting sort of romantic comedy. No, no. Right. We're just going to just reverse it and make them have no agency whatsoever.
Right. So I just had to specifically call out the sort of the inventor aspect of it. And look at who she meets. Granted, who cares about Christopher Columbus? But he's still an explorer. And that's who she had in her life. She had an explorer and a brilliant artist / inventor. And she was inspired by that, and she loved to build in her childhood, and then it's gone.
And I don't, what is,
so much sad making.
What about the love story? I don't understand how.
I'm sorry, is there a love story in this?
They're supposedly falling in love, and I don't understand how.
Yeah, whatever.
Like, I just don't get it. I don't understand this movie. This movie is like just, it's mind boggling.
Yeah.
It's in its nonsensicalness. I mean, it's like, it's almost makes less sense than my skits.
I think it definitely makes less sense than your skits.
I have to agree.
I will say that I can see what they were trying to do, which didn't actually make it onto the page. Mm. And the love story that should have been there is the love story where he needs confidence in his art and she needs someone to believe that she can do anything. And they inspire each other, and together they build amazing things. And then she becomes a real person because he wants her to be the amazing person that she is and to build things. And they end up like getting to be this amazing team that does stuff together. But that doesn't actually make it there, because a lot of the wonder is lost because of them just deciding to try on clothes and have sex. I mean, that's all they do.
Most of the time, yeah. Yeah. There's a very brief courtship in which it's
they could be building things together, and he could be supporting her and like basically being like, as much as she supports him by saying you can do this, he could be supporting her and saying like, you can do anything and I'll help you. But he doesn't, so it's just not there.
Well, what about you, Julia? What about your...
My fourth dislike? Yeah. Okay, so I like that Hollywood Montrose is a person of color and that he's a main character. There aren't really a lot of people of color in this world aside from Hollywood Montrose. I guess Armand might count, but I'm not really sure. And the thing is that because they decided to set this with the Egyptian opening scene, Kim Cattrall should not be Kim Cattrall. And the main character should be an Egyptian woman.
If anything, you know, if you're going to go with somebody who's at least slightly exotic / Egyptian looking, I shouldn't say exotic, but Egyptian looking, Roxy.
She certainly looks more like a plausible, I could have been an Egyptian.
I could have been an Egyptian, exactly.
But like, honestly, no. Basically, no. They shouldn't have had that scene. And I think they had it because in the 80s, at the time, Egypt was big. Everybody liked it. And there was a big fad for Egyptology. It was a big thing. That's why, you know, Stargate has also got it, and Indiana Jones had it, and there were all sorts of things. Like, I remember that, you know, half the kids in my class wanted to learn to write in hieroglyphics and stuff. It was a thing at the time. It was a big fad that people liked Egypt. And these things come in and out of fashion. So, like, I'm sure at some other point we'll have another fad for Egypt. And I'm not clear what the big fad for historically is now, except maybe probably World War I Edwardian era with Downton Abbey and all that stuff. That's really big right now. But in the 80s, there was a big sort of Egypt is hot thing. And I think that that's probably why they said it in ancient Egypt. Like, you had the Bengals walk like an Egyptian at the same time. And that was because Egypt was hot. That was a thing that we wanted to talk about. But it doesn't mean that you can go ahead and have an Egyptian woman who is Kim Cattrall, because she just can't.
Doesn't work.
And like, if you're gonna have Kim Cattrall be the mannequin, fine, but don't make it be like she's an Egyptian woman who didn't want to marry a camel dung merchant, which just none of it made sense, and the magic of it didn't make any sense. And that was why I asked you, Jen, if she like always looks, because I guess if you could say, well, maybe she comes to life in different eras and she always looks different, and in this version she looks like Kim Cattrall, but it's still kind of shit.
And I'm not sure why it would work that way. It just doesn't seem to make...
Well, because it's magic.
It seems to make less sense.
It's magic. You could have her look any way you wanted to. And if it's Pygmalion, she could look like the ideal of the guy who's bringing her to life.
Right.
Which doesn't help with the sexism, but I guess, like, makes an explanation for that. But, No, it just does not work at all. And I was very sad about the lack of just the fact that they decided to actually go with that avenue. The people of color in this movie, aside from Hollywood Montrose, there just really weren't any. And there should have been, because they set it in Egypt in the beginning.
Right.
All right. Fair enough. So it's my turn?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh, God, what do I hate about this movie?
It's your fourth dislike. Go for it.
My fourth dislike. Like, I've had enough alcohol now that I'm actually starting to have memory blanks about what I actually watched.
Please don't let Mannequin kill you with alcohol. That would be, like, the worst way to go.
I'm just, like, having, like, I just want to take a nap is where I'm at. Like, I feel exhausted by just the prospect of this film existing again in my brain. Because I hate this movie so much. Okay, so what do I hate about this movie? We talked about Roxy. I don't know. Oh my God, I've totally drawn a blank. Like, I had ideas about what I hate about this movie, and I don't know what anymore. I don't know.
Surely there's something.
Name some stuff.
Right, I don't know.
You're drawing blanks too.
I'm trying to think of my next dislike. Oh, wait, I know what my next dislike is. I'm trying to remember what my next like is, so.
You know, okay, so I pretty much despise I despise the ending. Like, I love that Hollywood gets a little brief moment of being awesome where, like, he squirts a giant hose at people and that's kind of cute. But it's so, like, the whole espionage steal the mannequin shit leading up to the conclusion where they're just going to destroy the mannequins. And I felt like that whole scene is this really bizarre, like, surreal, like, mind fuck. Like, just, why do they need to go to this level? Like, why don't they just, like, do, like, what? I mean, how hard is it for this company to just hire some, like, really creative artistic marketing types? It can't be that hard. Why do they need to screw over him? I mean, I don't understand. I don't understand this movie. But I just really hated this sort of corporate, like, espionage line in the film, because mostly because also it's James Spader being creep factor, like Greasy Boy, and, you know, Barney McGumble as the, you know, them working together and trying to, like, figure out how to sabotage this whole thing. And it just doesn't make much sense to me. And it just seemed really, really, like, farcical, but not in a way that's actually funny, but in a way where it's just, like, we're, like, dealing with, like, a substandard set of corporate morons. And thank you, Jen, for making weird noises.
It's my cat. Oh. He's purring.
Purr.
But he's anyway. He's also rubbing against the computer. Sorry.
But yeah, that's stuff I hate about it. It's just the corporate espionage. It's so stupid. Stop your cat from doing that or I will eat it.
I can't. He's very insistent.
Move him.
I'm trying.
Anyway. Sorry. We can skip to fifth likes if we'd like, since my dislike was lame.
That sounds like a plan. So I'm going to go with my fifth like as... Crap, I had it and then I lost it.
Stop your cat. I swear I'm going to eat your cat.
Can't!
I like the idea that her cat is basically some sort of superhuman monster that's going to slowly eat the entire podcast.
Exactly! He's very...
Because every time he rubs against the computer, it sounds like some sort of, like, horrible monster threat. It's like,
he's very scary.
Pretty much, yeah. Like, basically, next skit is going to be about how Jen's cat ate everyone.
Cat.
His name is Whiskey.
Whiskey,
it can be turned into a metaphor for alcoholism. It would be perfect.
For this show, we need one.
Exactly.
Okay. Fifth like.
Dude, I had it. What happened to it? It was in my brain.
Yeah, so the same place I've been where, like, I was like, oh, I have got all these rants. And then suddenly we get a little bit towards the 2-hour mark and it's like, I don't remember things right anymore. Brain because alcohol.
In it. In my brain.
Well, while you think about it, why don't we have Julia, who probably is far more prepared.
Yes, Julia.
Yeah. Okay, so my fifth like is the vehicles, because not only was there the motorcycle, which is kind of great, but there is also Rex's wagon. He gets carried around in a little radio flyer, which is adorable. And also the hang glider, which was one of those things that, like, when the hang glider made its appearance and Kim Cattrall is just, like, flying around a department store on a hang glider, which... what exactly was going on there? But okay. Moss kind of looked at me and was like, were hang gliders really big in the 80s? And I was like, I think they must have been, because I remember as a child, like, reading a book where the protagonist was a hang glider and that was, like, really cool. And at this point, I don't really think I know of anybody hang gliding. Like, it's not something I expect to see in movies or books.
Oh, it still happens all over the place around here.
I'm sure it still happens, but it's not something I expect to see as signified as cool in popular culture. And in the 80s, yeah. I think it was. Like, I think that was something that people thought was cool.
Along with rollerblading.
That scene was so long. Well, that was the 90s. Long.
Rollerblading was the early 90s.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. I was so excited about rollerblades when they were first out. But yeah, so like... the hang glider thing, just the fact that there was a hang glider in the movie, that was kind of cool. And, like, she's wearing her little aviator goggles, which is, I don't even know why she is, because she's still inside the department store. It's not like she has to protect herself from the altitude.
But at the same time, like, how does the physics of this work? She spends like 12 minutes turning in circles.
I have no idea.
It was just like really dramatic 80s synth music.
Yes,
like, it's like the music from like the Olympics. Dun, 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 dun,
dun, dun. Except it's not like as good as Chariots of Fire. It's much worse because it's really cheesy 80s synthesizer score.
Wouldn't that have been great? Like, she's like gliding and like it's the whole song of her, like, you know.
But like they were really embracing the sort of like Casio programmable synthesizer with like do 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 boom, boom. And it's like it's just one notch set transposed away from the horror soundtrack where it was like do 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 do, and this is like do 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 do. So it's like happier instead of like ominous.
What? Okay, Jen. No, I totally agree. Like, they could have had so much fun with the music.
But yeah, basically vehicles, like, points for creativity with the types of vehicles, because, like, motorcycle, wagon, hang glider, how much more variety do we really need in a department store?
Limousine.
Mm-hmm.
And some sort of convertible vehicle. What was that? What was Armand driving?
I forget, but he did have a convertible. He had a sports car.
It looked like a Ford Tempo.
Maybe it was. I don't know. Okay. That this is sort of related, and I suppose that it relates back to Julia's earlier like, but I really did love the building specifically. I'm not going to say all the sets because they weren't all great, but the building that they used for the department store, the Prince and whatever it's called, was stunning.
Mm.
I don't know what building they used to film this in. I have no idea. I could probably find it if I actually cared to research, which I'm trying to do right this second. But the first time he walks in and looks up and I was like, that would be the coolest freaking mall. Totally makes no sense as a department store. I suppose maybe if it actually extended up multiple levels, but it only appeared to actually be on the one level, which was interesting, or two levels.
So I think it actually is a department store. It was Wanamaker's department store at 1313 Chestnut Street in Philadelphia. And I did like the fact that this was actually set in Philadelphia. Like, they filmed it there and they called it out in the movie and they said, like, this is Philadelphia.
It was gorgeous. Hmm. Did they say it was Philadelphia? I don't remember.
Yeah, they actually did say that in the movie.
Is Wanamaker's still there?
I don't know, but that is where it was filmed. So it was there at the time.
To the Googles.
Because, yeah, it's gorgeous. And
wait, is it Wanamaker?
Wanamakers.
Wanamaker. Like the gun show?
Wanamaker. Wanamaker. The first department store in Philly. Seriously, it's freaking stunning. The organ, that's actually there. It is stunning.
No, I totally believe that all of that is there because that's how department stores were. They were this like wonderful, amazing wonderland when they first started.
Until places like Alestra showed up.
Yeah, and basically now they're all just Macy's. But like,
yeah, this one is Macy's. Yeah,
but basically at the time that they first started, they were these great show places, and the whole exciting thing about a department store was that it had all of this wonderful stuff, and you could walk in and you could get just about anything, and it was this amazing, like, all of these senses around you, just everything. You could see things and hear things and smell things, and it was wonderful and amazing. Yeah. And, like, then in the 80s, the mall really supplanted that.
Right.
So, like, the mall was the thing of the 80s where you could go into the mall and, like, all the different stores were there, and it was so cool. But before that, when department stores were new, it was like going to the department store was this amazing place. And you can still get that in some of the big old department stores. Like, If you go to Harrods in London, like that place is crazy.
Oh, God, Harrods is
And it's super crazy. It like has a dress code, so you can't go in there if you're wearing shorts or flip-flops or something. You have to be dressed well enough to be shopping in Harrods.
Okay, like I am totally now I'm starting to think there was an unintentional undercurrent of brilliance in this film because it's made in 1987, so it's set in the 80s. And in the 80s, the original store, which is where they filmed it, the Wanamaker, was sold. And that was actually one of the major things. The 15-store chain was sold to Woodward and Lothrop, owned by Detroit shopping mall magnate A. Alfred Taubman, who sounds suspiciously like our main villain character. What the hell is his name?
No, DJ Wirt. This is totally actually a... The story is a very 80s story. It is a story about an older model of business trying to revive itself and not go down in the current economy, which is leaving it behind.
Whoa.
So, it is definitely that kind of thing. It's the same way that another great movie from the 90s, Empire Records, is about an older model of store trying not to go down in the current economy.
Okay, so that will now be my fifth like. All of that. On top of that, I do really appreciate that the Sidewalk Guild of cement makers was represented.
Was I just doing my fifth like?
I was just going to say the Mannequin Guild was really well represented.
They were also also Mannequin Breast Guild.
I was just going to go with mannequins at all. Their arms, there were lots of arms.
Well, there were lots a lot of arms, arms, but breasts were also a very specific subunit.
I was really jealous of him for his first job because I was like, wow, being a mannequin sculptor would be kind of cool.
Except he takes 6 months to work on one fucking mannequin.
That's a problem. That's definitely an issue.
Is it 6 months or 6 days?
It was six days, but he was just the thing is that he wasn't supposed to be spending that much time at all. He was just supposed to be putting them through the regular mold that mannequins come out of and then assembling. No, I must carve it from scratch.
Yeah. But I'll just say that, my fifth like is both this weird undercurrent that it just discovered, but also that I'm really glad that unionized labor is having such an influence over film in Hollywood, especially in the
80s. So much. It's amazing. I never knew that the unions were so strong in Hollywood.
Yeah, especially the Mannequin Tit Union. That's a really, really specific union. You wouldn't think they'd have so much power, but they were able to get them.
What about the weird sunglasses union?
The sunglasses union.
Really, really well.
Okay, so I got a really interesting story about them. I know a little bit about their history because I've talked to members of the Weird Sunglasses Union. Now, they came about in 1922 when Thomas Edison's grandson actually invented a pair of sunglasses they could see under people's clothes. But it also gave you cataracts.
If they remade this movie now, do you think the Hollywood Montrose would be wearing Google Glass?
Oh my God.
I would hope so.
We should remake this movie.
No, no one should ever remake this movie.
No, we shouldn't remake it
unless
seriously.
We remake it as two films. One will be a film about a time-traveling Egyptian woman. The other will be about a guy who falls in love with the mannequin that doesn't actually turn into something real, but will just be an examination of severe psychological problems.
That would be amazing, wouldn't it?
Lars and the Real Girl?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and I haven't watched that yet. So, okay, it's already been made. So now we have to do the time-traveling Egyptian woman.
No, but Lars and the Real Girl, isn't it a little bit different? I mean, we're talking a non-sentient, non...
The Real Girl is not real. She's a real doll.
She's not real.
She's a doll that's supposed to be a real person?
Do you know what a real doll is?
Is that where you can have
Google
sex with it?
Google real doll. Yeah,
yes, you can have sex with it.
Just Google real doll and you'll find out. I don't need to explain this to you right now.
No, I don't want to watch videos.
You can find out with Google later.
No, I really don't. I'm not going to. That sounds horrifying. I don't want to watch people having sex.
You won't. If you Google real doll, you're not going to find people.
Oh, my God. Wanamakers used to have a monorail in the toy department.
That is awesome.
Holy crap. Best department store ever. Okay.
Awesome. Okay, so who has not done a like yet?
Julia.
No, I did.
No, she already did hers.
For vehicles. We all did it. So now it's now it's okay, dislikes. So,
okay, good.
All right, Jen.
Final dislike. My final dislike is that they made a sequel.
Yeah. Fuck. They did.
They did. Those and fuckers. I think the hilarious part about them making a sequel is that it stars Buffy. The original
Buffy. Movie Buffy, Christy Swanson.
Christy Swanson, which just makes me giggle a little. The story in the second one actually makes more sense than the story in the first one.
Hollywood is also in that one.
Hollywood is in that one, and one of the writers came back, which is just fucking...
They came back for that shit? Really?
Yeah, the original wrote the second one.
I feel like it is a paycheck, so...
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, gosh.
But, yeah, so they made a second one. Hollywood Montrose comes back. It stars Buffy. But the story, and this is the only thing I think I like about this, well, except that maybe I just hate it more, is that the second one actually managed to make more sense than the first one.
That's so absurd.
Yeah.
Because my understanding is the second one is actually worse.
Oh, no, they're both. Well, I don't know if it's worse, but they're both just freaking horrible. But at least the premise is that she's trying to find true love.
I've never seen the second one. I've never seen the first one before now, so I know that we're eventually going to have to watch number two for this. And I just don't know what to do with it. We'll see.
It's called Mannequin on the Move.
Yeah, Mannequin 2 on the Move.
Oh, gosh, it's so dumb. Christy Swanson as Jesse, William Ragsdale as Jason Williamson, also as Prince William, apparently.
Well, because
so, like, basically, this is a completely different group of people. Like, we basically believe that Andrew McCarthy and Kim Cattrall are still out there somewhere being true love people.
Yes.
Okay. Just checking.
And here is the brief... storyline synopsis for this film. Very brief, couple sentences. A young department store intern falls in love with a female store mannequin who is really a peasant girl fallen under a thousand-year spell. She comes to life whenever he removes the cursed necklace from her.
Wait, okay. I'm not going to ask any questions. Let's just move on.
Right? Thank you, Julia.
Just move on.
Brilliant dislike.
My last dislike is that this is just boring, but it's true and it annoyed me the whole way through. That aside from like one or two moments where they actually had a funny line, most of the time it was trying to be like snappy banter and funny dialogue, and it was just boring and it didn't hit at all.
And that
made me very sad because it's like, well, if it's gonna be a comedy, like at least have a few funny things. And be like snappy and be good, but it wasn't. And like there were a couple times, and those times actually made it worse because those times when I laughed, and there was like one point when Moss and I both looked at each other and went, okay, that was pretty good. But those actually made it worse because it reminded us how bad the rest of it was. So the fact that like most of it was just sucky made me sad. And again, I can only say that everybody who is listening to this, instead of watching Mannequin, you should go watch Big Business, which is funny all the way through and also very 80s-tastic and has gay characters that get to be real people. I can't say it's very good on people of color. It does have one character who is a chauffeur, but that's pretty much it. But other than that, like women have awesome, awesome roles, and it's a... fantastic 80s-tastic story that also involves like corporate world and hostile takeovers and stuff and is hilarious all the way through.
I also recommend you watch the Skiffy and Fanti rewrite of Mannequin, which will be coming to theaters next year.
With Betty White as Vampyra?
Yes.
Yeah, but for some reason that has Kristen Stewart in it and Keanu Reeves, so I don't know how good it's going to be.
It'll also have Liam Neeson, who would just
punch everyone. Next time, we need to rewrite and do the script, and this time we need to do it as Christy Swanson instead of Kristen Stewart.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Then I can play a Valley Girl, because I'm much better at that.
You need to have a skit where Liam Neeson is in it, but he doesn't ever actually talk. He just punches things.
Okay,
so, like,
no.
Every time Liam Neeson appears, it's just a punching sound.
We need to have a skit where it's Liam Neeson in the movies where he goes after terrorists and stuff. What are those called in the last few years?
Taken.
We need to have a Liam Neeson Taken skit versus the Mel Gibson, Kevin Costner, truly horrible film that he just made. That is totally a ripoff of everything that Liam Neeson has done recently, but he's never going to admit it.
What are you talking about?
That needs to happen.
So you need like
Liam Neeson for Taken versus Kevin Costner. From Waterworld, just to make it interesting.
Oh, no.
Mike Martinez could have suggested that we watch Waterworld, but instead chose Highlander 2.
I even suggested Seriously. That it would be, in the interest of pissing off Jen, it would be a good idea to pick
Mike Waterworld. Likes me. He's not going to piss me off.
No. He picked Highlander 2.
Which I love.
Make us all
so
die.
It's so awful.
Like, I have no real memory of Highlander 2, except that I'm pretty sure it has that Queen song that I like a lot. So I'm, like, already kind of like, thanks, Mike. You've reminded me that Queen song exists.
It's awesome. Because the first film is a fantasy movie. The second film is a science fiction film. It's genius.
No, it's not.
I'm not sure how science fictional you can really call that, but okay.
Oh, okay. Just wait.
So you both have done a dislike, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm the last one?
Yeah.
Okay. Get ready for this shit. It's coming.
Uh-oh.
Jonathan Switcher is my dislike.
Yeah, that's because he's horrible.
Valid dislike.
Let me explain the myriad ways in which Jonathan Switcher is the biggest waste of human space since Hitler.
You know the only way he could be worse?
So much hatred for the artists.
The only way he could be worse? Like, what, if he had a peg leg?
If he were played by Snoozy LaPorg.
Right, if it was Shia LaBeouf, he was going to be in the remake.
Oh my god! Best casting ever! Who's going to play Kim Cattrall? Oh my goodness. Yeah,
Kristen Stewart.
Kristen Stewart. Snoozy LaPorg. Oh my god. Ever. This movie's gonna be great. Hollywood, are you listening? You're making Gem and the Holograms. This will be even better.
I really hope Gem and the Holograms is awesome. I'm totally gonna go see it.
On one hand, I'm like seriously mocking Hollywood for making it. On the other hand, I'm super excited.
That movie has so much potential. I'm just
so
I don't
much.
Know what they're gonna do with it, but it has so much potential.
Okay, so should I explain?
Don't even bother.
I mean, I think we've spent 2 hours explaining how he's a terrible person, but go for it, Sean.
Okay, so just in brief. He spends the first 10 minutes losing every job imaginable because he cannot follow basic directions, which makes me wonder if he is maybe challenged in some significant way, because it doesn't seem hard. Like, even the pizza moment is the worst, because he sits there and it's like, just put some fucking peppers on the slices and put it in the oven. Why is it taking you 12 hours to make a fucking pizza? I
don't
understand. This is I wondered, like, when he went home, like, does he eat food? Or does, like, he spend 6 hours to make a fucking sandwich?
I think
he only does that when he's at work. And when he's at home, he's just like, yeah, I'll just make a sandwich, whatever. But when he's at work, he's like, no, it must be my art. And the pizza's like, we're in the era of Domino's. It needs to be 30 minutes or less, so get on that.
What's even funnier is that there doesn't actually seem to be any creations of his own at home. So obviously he only
it's because
work.
He has this delusion of grandeur that he is an artiste, which is only manifesting itself when he's at work, because it ruins every single job he has.
I like that you tried to say manifested in an accent and it totally wasn't working.
I didn't try, it's just that I've had a lot of smoky coke at this point.
I think we've all had a bit of that.
Just like talking about this movie, I'm like, I need another drink now.
I'm surprised Jen is still conscious, because she's drinking something that is by all intents and purposes probably moldy.
It is not. It's been sealed.
It's fermented. It's good.
Like my heart.
Started at 7%, but now it's 15. I fermented it myself. But yeah, I hate Jonathan Switcher. I just don't understand what anybody sees in his character. He's a total loser. He's a waste of time, and he's never sympathetic in this whole movie.
No, he manages to be a bigger tool than LaBouche, or whatever his name is, the guy who owns the other
LaBouche? You mean the band? You mean LaRouche?
No, I think he means...
I don't know.
She means the people who own the other department store.
Guy who owns the other department store. Yeah, exactly.
BJ Wurtz or whatever.
BJ! And the name! He somehow manages to be worse than a guy named BJ in the 80s.
BJ. That's great. That's a great name for him. He's such a...
I'll tell you, the only thing that makes me super sad about this is that I realized that 80s Kim Cattrall cannot play Jem from Jem and the Holograms, the new movie.
I know, right? Because that 80s, one outfit she wears, because totally
mannequin
Jem.
Mannequin Kim Cattrall could totally be Jerrica Benton.
Totally.
Oh, but she is so pretty.
Yeah, well, Jem is supposed to be super pretty. I mean, Jerrica is too, you know.
That was the only thing that was keeping me watching this, was just like, I would see her smile and it would bring me joy.
I was fascinated by this movie. I couldn't look away.
Oh, God.
I didn't think it was good, but I was like, I was drawn to it the way one is drawn to a train wreck.
It is a train wreck. Start to finish.
Films.
I mean,
are we done?
Yeah, we're done. Let's just stop it. Let's stop and try to get this done at midnight.
I quickly just say, though, I have to divorce my husband now.
Because he likes this movie. He just really thinks Kim Cattrall is pretty, because she is.
She's gorgeous.
I mean, that's basically why you like this movie, pretty much, is because either because you think that Hollywood Montrose is kind of badass and funny, or because you think Kim Cattrall is pretty. And probably just the latter.
I almost made that one of my likes, but then I started to feel bad considering how sexist this film is.
Right, so you can't just say Kim Cattrall, because she's hot.
But she is in this movie.
She's totally hot.
Absolutely gorgeous.
That's true.
I mean, she gets great costumes. She's got those amazing, like eyes that just, like, reach into your soul and, like,
suck. I don't know. It's a couple of those costumes, I just felt sorry for her, but most of
them. I mean, they're sexy costumes, but yeah, I mean, you can understand how they...
That cycling outfit?
Are sexy. Like, she has the Victorian 80s blouse that, like, goes all the way up to her neck and a ruffle and then has poofy sleeves. Like, that is a terrible look from the 80s that needs to just stay buried forever.
Works on me. Works on me. That's all I'm going to say.
The jumpsuit she wears when she's hang gliding, and it's just all kinds of bad.
Works on me.
Everybody from the 80s should be shot for wearing those clothes.
No, that's not very nice. You wanted to commit mass genocide? Jeez, Jen.
Yeah.
80s people are innocent.
She didn't say she wanted to kill them.
She said they should all be shot.
Yeah, but she didn't say where. They could have been shot in, like, the leg.
They should be shot in, yeah, exactly.
It would just blow off a toe.
There you go.
Every 80s person loses a toe.
All right. I think we should end this now.
We should end this. All right, Jen. Great at time.
I'm going with a D.
Oh, you are... No.
I'm going with a D.
D? D. Not a B. D.
D.
Okay, as in donkey.
D as in dog who rides a little radio flyer wagon.
Exactly.
Awesome. All right, Julie, what about you?
Again, I gotta go with a D, because, like, although there were lots of things I hated about this, the dog riding in the wagon was really cute, and Hollywood Montrose did kind of win me over a couple times, and the amazing sets and costumes.
And can I get something in your size?
Fuck. Damn.
Fuck. You know it's funny! Just if it is.
F minus. I hate this movie. I never want to watch another movie like it ever again.
Even though you think it's 80s-tastic and the 80s are the best decade.
Don't care. Because it ruins the 80s.
It makes no sense whatsoever.
Don't care. I don't care. The movie doesn't make sense. I don't have to make sense.
Sort of
I'm not obligated.
Homages to the '80s than this film, and yet
it's only making homage to the '80s because it's set in the fucking '80s and it's written in the '80s.
Y'all like, gotta go watch Big Business because that's amazing. Yeah, exactly. And it will cure all your ills.
I have seen Big Business, and like to me, if you go with an homage to the '80s, you do Big Business.
You just gotta watch it like 20 more times. I know all the lines. My sister knows all the lines.
I don't need to.
It's amazing. Yes, you do. It's so good. It's so good, and it's so funny all the way through.
I hate
not Mannequin, Big Business. Two Bette Midlers and two Lily Tomlins.
I hated this movie pretty much from the start, because immediately from the start, I hated the main character so much, I just hoped he'd get a motorcycle accident and it would have been about Roxy.
Oh, wait, now I know which Big Business is. Sorry, I was thinking of a different film. Oh, I totally do need to go watch Big Business.
No, Big Business
that
is amazing.
That movie is fucking awesome!
It's hilarious all the way through, and it's got two Bette Midlers and two Lily Tomlins.
Two Lily Tomlins! It's brilliant!
It's so good.
I totally agree. I was thinking of a totally different movie. What was I thinking of?
I don't know.
Okay.
There were a lot of movies in the '80s that had to do with business. So I can
exactly.
See
and most of them have business in the title, so I was confused. Mm-hmm.
Or something similar to it.
Alrighty. Well, on that note, we have graded this film 2 D's and an F minus, which puts it at
F plus.
F plus no, it's not an F plus.
Yeah,
it's not an F plus because D and F minus means it goes to F dash.
No, because
F plus, and then you have another D, which put it at the D minus.
No, I think it gets an F plus.
No, it's D minus.
I think you're overruled. It's an F plus.
I can do my math, damn it.
It's okay. It doesn't matter what your math says. I think that the movie averages.
Oh my god! I'm totally doing the math again after we get off the show because we're leaving. We're leaving, people. Goodbye.
All right. And on that note, awkward ending and scene. If you would like to send us hate mail on this episode or any other topics we've covered, you can do so in a number of ways. You can send us an email,
skiffyandfanty@gmail.com.
You can send us a tweet
@skiffyandfanty.
Leave a comment on the blog.
SkiffyandFanty.com.
Go to Google Plus.
Shawnee Jen.
And or Facebook.
The Skiffy and Fanty Show. Our intro music comes from Time Flux by Revolution Void. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.
Another weak human afraid to face death.
I fart in your general direction.
France, different planet.
The Force will be with you. Always.
End of line.
Oh, that inhuman moan is supposed to be Julia. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
Lightning sound.
It says... after lightning and thunder sound effect.
Shortly after lightning and thunder sound effect.
Oh, I didn't see the comma because somebody thinks in the way. Anonymous Grizzly, you're really pissing me off.
I'm sorry.
All right, this shit is way better.
Should I moan again?
No, I think I got it. I'll just add a random lightning sound effect. So. Good job, guys.
I like how your last bit of like throwing a lot of things together basically described every skit you've ever written.
Pretty much. Yeah. Also, I cannot imitate Betty White at all.
It's okay. We can't imitate anybody except Sean doing Yoda, of course.